The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Craig H.D. Armon presiding.
Good afternoon, counsel. Thank you for making the accommodations that you did, Ms. Levy. We appreciate it.
Sure.
And Mr. Manchin, it's nice to see you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize for the mistake. I sat down at 10 o'clock with a bad headache, and the next thing I knew it was 1 o'clock.
Ralph, I hope you're feeling better now, Mr. Manchin.
I am. Good. And again, I apologize to the court and to counsel.
That's fine. Thank you. We'll next call 4-22-0383, People of the State of Illinois versus Dwayne Hollins. Could counsel for the appellant please state your name for the record?
My name is Rebecca Levy. I'm from the Office of the State Appellate Defender, and I represent Dwayne Hollins.
Thank you, Ms. Levy. Counsel for the appellee, could you please state your name for the record?
David Manchin with the Appellate Prosecutor's Office.
Thank you. Ms. Levy, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors and counsel. This court should again remand this case to the circuit court because the trial court improperly sentenced Dwayne Hollins to 12 years in prison for delivering less than a gram of heroin within 1,000 feet of a school. And this time, this sentence is problematic on two different bases. First, the court below denied Hollins his right to due process when it did not inform him that he could elect to be sentenced under either the law that was in effect at the time the delivery in this case was committed, or the law that was in effect at the time he was convicted, tried, and sentenced. Shortly after the delivery in this case occurred in the end of October of 2017. And shortly after that, the General Assembly amended that particular statute. And the effect of it was to reduce the distance one would have to be moved within from a certain protected places like schools. And in this case, it was a school, but church or other public venues where there are families and children. So as of January 1st, 2018, in order for Hollins to be convicted of that, of delivering heroin within a certain amount of feet of a school, the state would have to prove that he was in was within 500 feet of it.
So you would acknowledge that that's a necessary element of the offense?
It's an element the state has to prove, absolutely. I mean, yes.
Okay.
I think that there's a difference, though. I mean, just because something's an element of an offense, I mean, it's either an essential element or that it's that it makes the amendment to the statute prospective only. In even in Jackson,
how can it be both?
Well,
it's an element of the offense, isn't it? Yes. A substantive change?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are various elements that appear at just at sentencing only.
But this isn't one that appears just at sentencing. This,
no,
you've already acknowledged.
That's correct.
Let me finish my question, please. You've already acknowledged that this is a necessary element of the offense. In other words, the state had to charge it, and they have to prove it. It doesn't kick in just at sentencing, correct?
It doesn't kick in only at sentencing, but the act of delivery itself is still there, regardless of whether it's within a certain amount of distance.
Well, actually, in this case, it wasn't, because count two was dismissed. You didn't object to that. Well, not you, but trial counsel didn't object to it, nor did they ask for a lesser included offense when the case went to trial, did they?
As far as I'm aware, they did not. But
okay, so you didn't want the delivery. This is an all or nothing shot on the 407B violation.
As far, I mean, I don't know the conversations that I'm not
privy. I'm looking at the record.
Yes, I do. I don't know what the counsel and the defendant discussed, not on the record. Correct. But yes, as far as the record shows, they did not ask for a lesser.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The underlying act of delivery, though, Collins is now asking for that. Because the statute was amended, of the statute that he was convicted of, 407 was amended, and he was not within 500 feet of the school. He was within 1,000 feet of it, but because his case was pending in the circuit court, pretty much the whole time after it had been amended, he wasn't even arrested until May. So this case was the amendment was already in effect when he was arrested, when he was tried, when he was convicted, when he was sentenced the first time and the second. And because it increased, the amendment actually decreased his liability or his potential for a longer sentence because of the delivery being near a school. Under the statute on statutes, he was entitled to be first informed that he had the right to elect to be sentenced under either of the statutes. And then he could have made that election, but that didn't happen in this case. I do think it is more similar to a sentencing issue than the state or your honors have stated. In Jackson, the Illinois Supreme Court stated that the value, an amendment to the limits of the value of an item stolen in a theft, didn't affect the substantive elements of theft. And here, the delivery is still a delivery. Just like whether it happened within 500 or 1,000 feet of a particular location, Collins is still guilty of the underlying delivery. And the section 407 of the Controlled Substances Act is basically an enhancement to the section 401, which is the delivery statute, just on its own, just without an increased class of felony or length of sentence when it's an underlying outright delivery without regard for the location or to whom the delivery occurred. The state absolutely, of course, was required to prove that if it was going to convict him under the prior statute that had not been amended, would have had to prove and that the delivery occurred within 1,000 feet of the school. But Collins had the, I mean, that is part of the offense, but the actual offense itself is the delivery, just like the actual offense in Jackson was the theft. The value of it doesn't change the fact that the theft occurred, the value that had been taken. And then the state says that this case somehow runs afoul of Apprendi. And I don't think Apprendi even applies here at all. Apprendi, in this situation, the amendment to the statute lessened or mitigated the punishment. And Apprendi dealt with when a punishment was increased. Here, Collins is requesting that the amendment be applied to him. And the language of Section 4 of the Statute of Statutes expressly says that changes to laws that mitigate a punishment or sentence can be applied to any judgment that is pronounced after the new law has gone into effect, if the party who it affects consents to that. And here, Collins asked for that to happen, but he was never told that that was an available option for him. And because he was never informed of that, he did not waive or forfeit this matter. So Collins is asking this court to vacate his conviction, vacate his sentence, and either remand for resentencing under Section 401, if it would be a Class 2 felony, with a sentencing range of 3 to 7 years instead of the Class 1 that he has now of, well, he has 12 years, but the range is 4 to 15. But this court could also vacate his sentence and reduce it itself on appeal to save judicial resources and time. And we would ask that this court do that and sentence him to 7 years for, if this court agrees with the argument that he was denied his right to due process by not being told he had the right to elect under which statute he wanted to be sentenced. The court, the sentence is also problematic in that the court relied on factors that it shouldn't have. The court abused its discretion in applying it, in re-sentencing Collins to 12 years in prison again. This is court is aware it remanded for resentencing, and Collins is not arguing that he's required to be sentenced to a lesser sentence. But here, the court, its language seemed more that it was trying to defend the sentence as not being excessive. In particular, the court stated that he didn't find the sentence to be excessive, which wasn't the issue before the court. It was that he was supposed to be sentenced not as a mandatory Class X offender, and he had one last felony conviction. The court also it also erred in focusing on the harm that Collins had caused to society, and it reiterated that he had the state argued in the court, it reiterated that he had had a pattern of drug delivery. And as I noted in our briefs, this is his only conviction ever for a delivery offense.
Excuse me, if I may interrupt. Wasn't there testimony from, I think it was Tanika Hervey, that she and the defendant had sold drugs together and described a pattern of driving to Chicago and buying heroin and cocaine and then returning to Lincoln to sell drugs then out of the home?
She testified that they drove there twice in October. Specifically recall if she had other occasions that she's mentioned that they'd driven there. Her version of events obviously is somewhat suspect or incredible or is subject to some credibility sort of question, in that she also committed the same offense and pled guilty to it and testified against him. She seemingly has a longer or more involved, based on what is in the record, at least, relationship with heroin and selling it. The court credited her testimony that she sold the heroin for the most part and that Hollins wanted to stay away from it. And the offense of delivery is punished more significantly, or it's a higher class felony than just possession, because there is harm involved. But that's not another reason to add more or to aggravate. It's not an aggravating factor in the sentence, unless the harm is so out of the ordinary or it's apparent. It's not a regular drug case. In this case, there's no harm at all. There wasn't really even much potential for harm, where the police created this whole situation by sending an informant to buy the heroin. He wasn't expecting her. He didn't answer the door when she first knocked. He didn't solicit her. She came to him. And the police immediately recovered what she bought from him, which was less than a gram of heroin. But there was no time or ability for anyone to use the heroin, where the state set up the whole ordeal or the whole situation. And then again, also, although he didn't object in the court below, the reference to the tickets he received in IDOC, or he allegedly received, because they weren't presented to the court and no one testified about them. The range of dates that those eight maybe events possibly could have happened is over a 20-year period. And that's a very long time. And it was only 9 months of that time period was after he was originally sentenced in the Manson case. Those eight events could have happened in 2000, which is when I believe that the PSI said it was from 2000 until I believe 2019. Him having possibly having eight tickets over that long of a time period doesn't really indicate that he has a difficult time adjusting to prison, like the court asserted when they sentenced him. If there are no other questions, we're asking this court to reduce Mr. Hollins's conviction to a class two felony and his sentence to 7 years.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Manchin.
May it please the court. In this case, the defendant simply does not have any right to an election between the sentence at the time of the offense and the sentence at the time of trial. The change from 1,000 feet to 500 feet from the business was a substantive change. And under the statute of statutes, you cannot apply a substantive change to a prior offense. Since distance is an element of the offense, any change in that element is necessarily a substantive change that cannot be applied retroactively. The Jackson case that defendant relies on is highly suspect. First, it proceeds on the theory that because value of the property was not an element of the offense, the change in it therefore could be applied retroactively. However, since Jackson was decided, the legislature has declared that value is in fact an element of the offense, undercutting the premises of Jackson. And Jackson is clearly inconsistent with the holding in Apprendi that any fact that increases a defendant's punishment for a crime other than a prior offense has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And in another Jackson decision in from 2002, that's 199 Illinois 2nd 286, the Illinois Supreme Court said, the underlying lesson of Apprendi is facts that expose a defendant to punishment greater than the otherwise legally prescribed are by definition elements of a separate legal offense. The underlying felony here, as counsel says, is the delivery. The sentence is changed by the fact that the delivery takes place within a certain distance of a prohibited place. Under Apprendi and the plain language, that an element that you have, that a change in the element is substantive, Jackson case decided by the defendant is no longer good law and should not be followed, because the even if the change in distance really only affects the potential sentencing range, it is nevertheless a substantive change in the offense. That the distance had to be proved as an essential element of the separate offense under Apprendi. To apply Jackson, who says that value is not an element when the legislature says it now is an element, just simply should not be followed. The statute simply does not apply to substantive changes like this. With regard to the excessive sentencing issue regarding the consideration of the tickets and the consideration of the harm, Casillas and Easley, the Illinois Supreme Court expressly held that information regarding a defendant's prison record contained in a pre-sentence report can be considered at sentencing. Under those holdings, the trial court committed no error in considering the defendant's prison record.
Counsel, excuse me. It appears to me, though, in the sentencing that the trial court seemed to suggest that these were new incidents. And it appears that in looking at the PSI, it is almost a 20-year period. And it does not appear to me that it was clear in the record specifically when those alleged violations had occurred.
The problem comes in that in the initial pre-sentence report that was filed before remand, the pre-sentence report did not contain the information regarding the prison record. In the amended pre-sentence report, they were included. So in that respect, they were new information before the court. The age of them only goes to the weight. Obviously, if there was clear evidence that between the two sentencing dates, the defendant was involved in 15 fights in the jail, that would be given more weight than the fact that over the course of 20 years, he's had a certain number of infractions of prison rules. So it's not that there was error to consider it, it's just how much weight does the court give it. And I don't believe that given the court's primary focus on the defendant's prior record and the commission of this offense while on, I believe it was parole, that the weight given it would not require reversal. With regard to the harm in delivery of heroin, there's no violation of rule that says you cannot consider elements of inherent in the offense, because the legislature has expressly stated that the harm from delivery of heroin may be considered. So that there's no error there. And the harm here was beyond that inherent in the offense because of the defendant's pattern of drug dealing. The testimony was that there was multiple trips to Chicago to procure drugs to sell drugs. So it's not, that is not inherent in this particular delivery, so that the court's consideration of harm by dealing was not error. I'm trying to remember the defendant's prior record. Again, the defendant seems to be suggesting that because the prior gun conviction is not being considered, the trial court is required to impose a lesser sentence. And there is no requirement that a lesser sentence be imposed or remand. The trial court here expressly relied upon the defendant's prior convictions for drug offenses and multiple violations of probation and the violation of parole to find that the imposition of the original sentence was appropriate. And I submit that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in its sentencing upon remand. If there are no further questions from the court, I will stand on my brief.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Levy, rebuttal. You're back on mute.
Sorry. Regarding the harm that might have potentially been caused in this case, the state cites in its own brief, McCain, People versus McCain, which explicitly states that if a trial court intends to consider the societal harm that the defendant's conduct caused or threatened to cause as an aggravating factor, the trial record or the sentencing record much has to demonstrate that the defendant's conduct had a greater propensity to cause harm than that which otherwise would be caused by the act of delivery. And that it's more, there's more harm involved than the degree of harm inherent in the act itself. And there's no demonstration of that here at all. And regarding the IDOC, the court's reliance on the IDOC tickets, counsel said it goes to weight, but the court gave it weight, significant weight, because it mentioned it, explicitly mentioned his IDOC record, I guess, during when it imposed sentence. And it didn't have that information before, if the information was even accurate. So the court did consider it and considered it as aggravation in reimposing the same 12-year sentence. He had one last felony conviction. The state really didn't present anything new in aggravation at all. The sentencing range had been 6 to 30, and his sentence was kind of in the middle, a little less than half of the maximum. And now it's just 2 years less than the maximum, but before his sentence was, the court believed that it should be less than half of what the range was, and now it's at the very top of it. There's just, I mean, one or two of these small errors maybe would not have shown that the court abused its discretion, but here it's just three separate things that the judge either relied on or didn't rely on in imposing sentence. This is the second hearing. The court, like I mentioned earlier, expressed that it was reimposing the sentence because it didn't believe that it had been excessive the first time, which, as I mentioned, was not at issue before the court at all, whether before the trial court. He was supposed to be resentenced for a lower class felon. And then lastly, just really quickly, Jackson does not undercut or the court's or the legislature's declaration that the element that the value of the item is an element of theft. It always was. The state, the defendant has a right at sentencing or at trial, wherever it's going to occur, to make the state prove its burden or live up to its burden. And if an item costs, if the state wants it, if the state is trying to convict and sentence the defendant, I'm not familiar with what the current values are for which class felony for theft, but I believe in Jackson, it was $300. So the court would, the defendant would has the right to force the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the item exceeded $300 or whatever amount whatever the amount is set at. And it's really no different than the distance here. The delivery is still the same, just like the act of theft is still the same. And if Your Honor has any other questions, it will stand on my briefs.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The court will take this matter under advisement. The court stands in recess.